Thank you very much, sir. Pleasure to be in with you tonight. And again, I know you just heard about this a minute ago, but thank you, everybody, for becoming Coast Insiders. The some of this stuff shows up on the net, which is kind of cool, except there's problems with that, you know. It's copyrighted material, you know that. So it gets taken down, because that's what happens with copyrighted material. When it goes up on the net, it's not supposed to be there. As much as flattering as it may be to have it up there, it's still illegal. So become a Coast Insider, and then that way it doesn't matter if your transmission is interrupted. It doesn't matter if you really kind of need to sleep. You have 3 years of archived shows, and it's over 1,000 of them, so you will like it, and it's very inexpensive. You can stop anytime you want. Nobody's going to call you to update your credit card number or anything like that. Okay? All right, very good. We'll be back with Brett Luter, author of A UFO Hunter's Guide. We'll get into a whole bunch of stuff. What is it? What is a UFO? I don't know what it is. Maybe you do. We're also going to take some of your calls as well, so stand by for further feeding of the mind on Coast to Coast AM. You know, when the experts are baffled, they're not experts. But even if they were experts and they weren't baffled, it's pretty hard to remain an expert. It's just a little bit too much incoming data. So how do you stay current with this stuff, Brett? People have been studying this for a long time. We don't seem to be much closer to an answer. And so much of this stuff, as you were saying, looks like it could be our stuff. I mean, most people are not aware that our stealth bombers, those are awesome-looking things, but guess what? Those things are actually a direct ripoff of the Horton brothers from the late 30s, who were obsessed with the flying wing and began building products, all sorts of Horton aircraft for Nazi Germany. That F-86 Sabre jet is Willie Messerschmitt's Project 1101. The MiG-15 and the variants after that, that's Kurt Tank of Focke Wulf. That's his design. I mean, it's just unbelievable. A lot of this stuff, and I mentioned earlier to the UFO con guys, we did a little Skype there for a minute. The B-52 bomber, you know, our frontline bomber still, the reason it's the B-52 is because that's when it was put into service. I mean, it's been in service for a long, long time, 60 years. So maybe this stuff has been hanging around since the Nazi days. You know, there's all sorts of talk about Nazi UFOs, and those guys were without a doubt the Nazi party ran the country doesn't mean everybody there was a Nazi. These technicians and engineers, aeronautical engineers and so forth, they were cutting edge. These guys were seriously cutting edge, and we know they were working on flying discs. So how do you discern the real from the unreal? I think probably the ones that are there and then disappear are theirs, and the ones that fly over yonder and we can see them the entire distance to when they reach the vanishing point, those are probably ours. I'm done.
Okay. Well, if that was one question, I have to say that's a pretty loaded question.
Yeah, it is.
A few things come to mind. First of all, the treatise Robert Anton Wilson does on what an expert is. After done reading that, you realize an expert, that's just absurd to consider yourself an expert. what is an expert? There's no expert on anything, really. My friend Jordan Maxwell likes to say, I'm the world's foremost expert on nothing. I love that. And I say, no, that's wrong. I'm the world's foremost expert on nothing, because how could I know more than Jordan? You know?
No, it's me. So I'm the world's foremost expert on nothing.
Right. That's the first honest deduction I think a person can make. after that, I would say I'm totally tired of the game of paying attention to the government, because the government really isn't the government anymore. It's a corporation. I think it's somewhere in Title 18 of the U.S. Code that it tells you right there, where it's the corporation now. It's not a government anymore. And so, you know, for me, learning as an investigator, and believe me, John, I have a lot to learn. I have a lot of dues to pay still. And just the fact that I'm here on this show in place of many, many other investigators that rightfully could be here in place of me, places an enormous burden on me to really describe the plight of these individuals. you know, when you're you one of the questions you proposed in that treatise or that monologue you just gave out was what is real and what is not, and who's maybe who's of the one. My interpretation is what's of the light and what's of the dark, what's good and what's bad. I had a chance to ask author J.J. Hertak that, and Desiree Hertak, that as I interviewed them for my first book, Song in Your Heart, Story of the Search for the Lost Note. And I asked him point blank, how do you tell that, you know, discernment is a huge issue for a human being. I mean, we can be fooled on so many levels. You just got to study mind control to realize that. How do you discern if a being is of the light or not? And he, right, without hesitation, said back, if you ask it to leave and it does, it's of the light. And if it doesn't leave, it's probably not of the light because it's violating your free will. And so here we, it calls in universal laws and what real laws are we actually living by? And I was listening to the show earlier, or was it a part of the some of the bumper commercial stuff this guy's talking about, the laws and the Constitution. And, you know, as far as a UFO investigator goes, you bump into the law and the authorities on many different occasions. And if the system that's in place is deceptive, then as a UFO investigator, to pay attention to that system is a distraction from what is really going on. And this is one thing, I think, at least, that I bring to the table in ufology that hasn't really been looked at. I know Peter Gersten has come at it from a law standpoint, but really that's just on the public side. And so what you have in society today is this public. And it's a fiction. It's a corporate fiction that is animated by human consciousnesses in what are called offices. And so from the president down to the regular police officer, they're holding offices in the public. And so how does this affect a UFO investigator? Well, in the intro to my book, I describe the sign that is regularly displayed at Area 51. And it's a warning that you could be killed if you're there, or if you don't, you know, you don't want to mess with these people. George Knapp, in his investigator tip for young investigators, is don't mess with those people because they'll just shoot you. They don't care.
Yeah.
But what they're really operating on is this: they're operating in this public. And so, as a security guard, let's say for the Area 51. They're in an office. And so as an investigator, it's important to know this so that you know how to deal with these people if you're Peekaboo Peak or another vantage point that looks into Area 51 and you get approached by these types of individuals that are occupying an office. You have to realize the dichotomy. Yes, they're real people, but that's on the private side. On the public side, they're animating this office that they have to fulfill this role, that they're going to chase you out of there or threaten you. And you, there's ways that you can get through that public facade, the fiction. And I don't think any other UFO investigator has gone this route. But if I may recommend a website, it's creditorsandcommerce.com. And a friend of mine, Gordon Hall, and his friend Jack Smith, explain this whole dichotomy of the public versus private. And so now when you talk about military, you're talking about the public. And when you talk about government, quote unquote government, which is really a corporation, you're talking about the public. They are by law fiction. And so most investigators are running around paying attention to the authorities. Now on a local level, it's a little different because a lot of the people on the local level don't understand this. And so they're still just genuine, real people trying to help people. That's how law enforcement started.
Sure.
You know, that's how government started, trying to people helping people. But now we've got this public. It's like, I liken it to the beast. It's the 666 beast that's going to devour everything. If you pay attention to the work of Jordan Maxwell, he says everything is divided into either Nazi or communist ideology, and that's how our country is based. Well, when you look at this public, you realize now that the government, what the creditors and commerce philosophy identifies as the state, it's federal, state, local, and municipal, all the fiction, they are literally running wild, and it's going to devour itself. And they're the number one employer in the country. So if the quote-unquote government is the number one employer in the country, doesn't that make it a communist country by definition?
Well, yeah, you know, and listen, these questions, that was interesting the way you described that, the little diatribe I did earlier. That was your initiation into the Wellesian shotgun out the back door thing, and you took it exactly where I want you to take it, which was, let's just open it. I like these extended conversations. It's like, rather than just go down a list of questions, we can talk about anything that you want. This is your time. I am merely the host. But a while ago, you said it's a corporation. You know, Brett, I think it's always been a corporation. I just think it took a while to get big enough for everybody to see it. So, you know, take a look. And it seems like it's incumbent upon us. They are not going to tell us anything. So what makes me wonder now is, become a regimented part of the apparatus and gain access to these things, or refuse to comply and be removed.
Wow, you hit the nail on the head. What a dilemma each individual on Earth now finds themselves in. Do I give up my driver's license now because I know it's right and because we have a right to travel in America? Do I want to let DMV tax my right to the pursuit of happiness? You know, when you really realize that, no, you don't. But most people just keep doing it because they don't know how they're going to do the rest of their lives as they've been taught. And so I refer to this guy that was on your bumper. I'd love to know who this guy is talking about the Constitution, but we've got to a point now where I agree with him. It's in place. And it's bit by bit, little tiny bits, we've given up our power, is what the real story is. And this is why in my first book, Song in Your Heart, The Story of Search for the Lost Note, I say that there is no conspiracy. This is simply about a struggle for the control of human consciousness. Do we want to hold our own consciousnesses individually, or are we going to give over aspects of our power to somebody else? That's the basic question.
If you get into that whole thing about when you have a civilization, I mean, I guess the object was you give up a little bit of individual freedom, a little bit, for the benefit of the collective. You know, you got to check your guns when you ride into town, and we got a hotel, and we got a place to take a bath, we got livery for your horses, saloon to get drunk in, we got sporting ladies there, whatever you want, but you got to check your guns here. Okay. If I'm going to come into this little town and enjoy the benefits and pleasure myself, whatever, I gotta give up a little bit of freedom. So you do. Well, let's look. I mean, I don't want to get too much off your topic here, but
we're not.
Why do people not get this, Brett? It's like you got the NDAA that can imprison you without charges indefinitely. Indefinitely.
Only on the public side.
Yeah. And now you got drones all over the place. You got cameras all over the place. Apparently in Maryland, there's a bunch of them being taken down. I mean, people are like revolting against the Big Brother thing, and they're tearing up the cameras. Now they got cameras watching cameras.
Right.
You every keystroke of your computer, I mean, what does it take for people to figure out you are in a technocracy?
I love that.
And your government's going fascist. I don't care if it's Obama. I don't care if it's Bush. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't care about left or right unless you're just crazy in your ideology, either to the left or right. At that point, I become an anti-stupidist. Let's stay in the middle here and sort this out. So they're going to turn out. They treat us like ignoramuses while they do this stuff routinely. Anybody they want gets a pass. But the measure of the character of a person now is how much tax money they pay. mean, what is this?
And if you don't pay your taxes, you're seen as a bad person.
Oh, absolutely. You have no character. And in fact, the more tax you pay, the better person you are.
Right. What a load of hooey that is. Look, I, at risk of getting cut off like your previous guest or the previous guest that was cut off.
I didn't cut him off.
whoever cut him off, I'll just say that the 16th Amendment was not ratified properly. In other words, it wasn't magically consecrated properly, and it's not legal. The IRS is a foreign entity operating on American soil. To top it off, by definition, by law, there's no money. So how can they collect debts from people if there's no money? That's a fraud in itself.
You know why I like talking to men like you? Because you're radical. So let's get radical some more. Mayor Bloomberg recently said he couldn't believe that every police officer in the country didn't go on strike until Americans do the right thing, and I'm paraphrasing here, these aren't his exact words, give up their guns. Well, I got one for you, Mike. I can't believe that every American taxpayer doesn't refuse to pay taxes until that border's closed, our troops are brought home from this undeclared, almost decade-long war, and that Fed is audited, and this budget is balanced. Do that, and we'll start paying you again.
Yeah.
Is that too radical? It probably is. I've probably got a damn missile headed for me right now.
Right. You could be your own guest. I mean, you just, I don't disagree with anything you just said. The reality of our situation as a human being, let's just say in America, but this extends around the earth. This fiction is not just in America. This is, as I describe in my work that I started to unveil in my first book, Song in Your Heart, the story of the search for the lost note, is I unveil my worldview that magic controls the world. And you can see this in a variety of levels, especially with law. If you get into consciousness, you talk about symbols, okay? All these things are, everything revolves around symbols. Well, let's just start there. So that's one indication that everything is ruled by magic, because you can't... Anything you can describe can be described, of course, in multiple levels, but always you can describe it symbolically. Okay, that's pervasive through anything we can describe in our reality as we know it as human beings. another way you can tell that we're ruled by magic is that everything revolves around contracts. And so, you know, in the earthly realms, in the material realm, we look at contracts. Sure, we got contracts for this or that or whatever. And we sign our name for contracts, and that binds us to this contract. Well, what is a contract? Well, when you get into it, you realize a contract is a magical binding. And it involves the three tools that I propound is what magic is. And there's a many, many definitions of what magic is. But magic, as I see it, is three tools, and they're used for basically one purpose, and that purpose is to bind energy or not bind energy, in other words, or deflect a binding that's coming towards you. Okay, and these three tools are very commonly known, but I don't think anyone else has quite described it like I have, and that's these three tools are ritual, symbolism, and intention. And so for every action a human makes, as mundane as tying their shoes to as sophisticated as Aleister Crowley doing a six-month-long ritual called the Amalantra Working, which supposedly opened a portal to another dimension and allowed this being called Lam to come through, who maybe not coincidentally represents the Greys. They all revolve around the same three tools. Doesn't matter what spiritual tradition you talk about, what religion, what secret society stuff is going on, whether you're doing a mundane object. It's ritual, symbolism, and intention. And so with this going in mind, as a UFO investigator, and I kind of forget what your question was, honestly, but just to kind of bring it back into what we were talking about, that's why James Gillen can spot beam a UFO three times, because that's universal magical initiation, three times. A judge pounds his gavel three times before the contempt of court.
You can say you can divorce somebody in certain parts of the world by just declaring, "I divorce you three times," and you're done.
There you go.
So, tell you what.
So I've read a Wendell Stevens book where an abductee testified that when he held his cross up to the abductors, they telepathed to him, "Oh, he's using his magical symbols against us."
Oh, gotcha. Hold tough. Hold tough there. We got to take a hard break here. We'll be back with Brett Luter. His book is A UFO Hunter's Guide. And that's just the beginning. This is Coast to Coast AM. Here's something a little obtuse for you. It is said a criminal usually returns to the scene of their crime. It's been asserted by psychologists over the years that they subconsciously want to be caught. I wonder if we, the human race, wants to be caught. Guilt and fear. How much could we do? How much could we learn? How far could we go if we could just get rid of those two things? Maybe we'll talk about that, and maybe we'll just, maybe we won't, but we'll talk about something, and you better get your waders on if you haven't already, because I predict it's going to get deep as we carry on with Brett Luter, author of A UFO Hunter's Guide, and we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Brett Luter, hey, it's great to have you on as a first-time guest tonight. It's a real conversation. We're just all over the place. I can't even remember what we were talking about because my head keeps blowing up with new questions to ask you.
Great. I love it. Let's keep it going.
You know, been a lot of talk on Coast to Coast AM over the years about Bigfoot, which conjures up a hideous vision of a giant stinking foot in my head. However, and, you know, Steve Quayle's been on here talking about giants, you know, and apparently every museum of any significance in the world has these 16-foot males, you know, with a 14-foot-tall female lying next to them. We don't have those things, but apparently this is fairly common stuff across the globe. And so we get back to Bigfoot. I'm going, well, why couldn't this Bigfoot thing be a giant? I mean, even in Star Wars Episode 4, you got the Wookiee. That must be the Bigfoot, the token Bigfoot, I'm guessing. So yeah. Well, go ahead. Just take it from there. That's this first ever case, you know, and the Bigfoot and the possible abductees and blah, blah on the same night. I mean, just take it wherever you want to.
Okay. Wonderful. to bring it back to the Wookiee, Chewbacca, you know, what does George Lucas know? That's what I want to know. I want to sit down and talk with that guy. Jordan Maxwell talks about how because of the situation on Earth the way it is, that there are certain individuals that understand what's going on, and they realize if they come directly out to communicate, they'll just be killed. Kennedy is the biggest example of that. Kennedy wanted to disrupt the system. Some say it was because he wanted to introduce his own money. Others say it's because he wanted to introduce the ET concept. Either way, when you go directly too far, the powers that be take you out. So those that are smart enough realize they have to communicate to the masses on a different level. This is where they start to work with Hollywood. They become enlightened on their own in some way, go into movie producing and try to produce movies now that are made to wake people up. A Handmaid's Tale is a movie that Jordan will point to.
Right.
Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Allegedly, Stanley Kubrick was killed just for making the movie because it portrayed the secret magical ritual orgies that take place within elitist circles that, from my view, they do that in an attempt to manifest the outcomes they desire because those are the three tools, ritual, symbolism, and intention. When you use those in the right way, you manifest the outcome you desire. That's just the way that I view the universe and how it works. and so, okay, go ahead.
No, you go. You go ahead. This thing about Kubrick is that who bandied that theory around? I heard that some time ago, and then it just dropped off the scope.
Well,
that Kubrick had actually been done away with over this.
I heard that off the record. And but I heard it from a prominent, well-known author and who said some other things off the record. And what I find interesting is that there's a video out there, and I forget what it's called, but it's about the moon. And it talks about Stanley Kubrick in the movie. And I'd have to look it up to find out what that one is. I'll have to send it to you by email or something if I can't think of it while we're on the air. But it appears to be some type of a parody where the producers have used media sound bites with Kissinger and other prominent figures, like they're all talking about this moon thing and they really want to find out what's going on with it. But it seems to be a spoof. But in that movie, they talk about the reason, a possible reason why Kubrick was killed wasn't because that he made Eyes Wide Shut, but was because he was privy to this specific kind of camera technology that would allow certain types of features to be revealed. And so what I find interesting, because, yeah, you never know that if this is real or not. So you always want a cross-reference, right? So here comes Jose Escamilla with his new work on the moon. And it's fascinating. He's got a computer program. He's working with some computer guys. They developed a program that will reveal the color on the moon. And I wish I could go into the technical explanation of it so I could seem more credible. But all I can say is I've seen him present this at a conference, and it shows green and blue on the moon, like there's forests and lakes. And what this does is it takes me back to some of my research for the book involved going back in some old Vladimir Terzisky lectures. And he's got a lecture that's 10 hours long. I think he did it over 2 days. I forget where he did it. It was somewhere in California, I think. But he described how, well, he actually showed pictures, black and white photographs, of U.S. statesmen water skiing on a lake that he claimed was on the moon. And, you know, to kind of bring this all back to how we started this conversation, what we are told is not the truth. And we are literally living in a fiction. And, again, if people aren't aware of what's going on, they can never get free. So, you know, whether it's the law they're studying, whether they want to get into it through UFOs, whether they want to get into it through their own spirituality, it's all going to lead back to the same place. Who are we? Why are we here? Why is society like it is? And so, you know, again, I forget kind of where we started off on this. I love these kind of conversations. They go off on tangents, just so you know.
Well, it's just hanging out in the global living room, you know. It's not real structured. You know, you were talking about light and dark a while ago. If you tell an entity to leave, that's from the light. If it hangs around, it's violating your free will. That's the dark side. Do you see a spiritual correlation here, you know, fallen angels, sons of God returning, you know, that whole thing with the, you know, where they looked at the what were called vents in the Great Pyramid, but it's actually lines up on Osiris, and, you know, there's a message from Osiris right there on the sarcophagi and all of this. I mean, do you see good and evil in this?
Okay. I don't know specifically what you're talking about with Osiris, but it seems to be referring to Graham Hancock maybe, or Robert Bovall kind of stuff. In terms of good and evil, I kind of side with Michael Tessarian on this issue. There is no evil. It's a Hegelian construct. Thesis plus antithesis equals synthesis. In other words, the opposites merge together equal a new third outcome.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's right there in Scripture. When it's like, I, the Lord, create the light and the darkness. I, the Lord, create good and evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. It's like, okay. Understood.
I see what you're saying, and I grew up with that. I grew up in a Roman Catholic background. We didn't necessarily go to church all the time, but when I went to visit my grandparents, they coaxed me to go to 6 a.m. Mass with a dozen donuts. And so I'd get up early and I'd go just so I could get the donuts, you know, because society has me addicted to sugar, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just another form of mind control. And so I grew up with that kind of it's a constraint on thought, really. And I lost my place there.
Well, no, it's just the scriptural connotation. Do you think there are actually clues in various holy, not just the Christian Bible, but maybe in other books that are regarded as holy that allude to these beings? I mean, we may be concentrating on the tech rather than the motivation behind the tech's movement, so to speak.
Okay, I agree. You know, when you realize the Bible's been edited multiple times, you have to question the information in it. But you should question information anyway.
should question everything.
That's right. When you really question the Bible, you know, people come up with books like The Church, or The Book The Church Doesn't Want You to Read, edited by Tim C. Leadham. And that was the book where I first learned about Jordan Maxwell, incidentally. But when you really study that stuff, you realize it doesn't make sense. And when I've done extensive interviews with Jordan Maxwell, and in one of the interviews, he told me about a book called Unearthing the Bible by two of Israel's leading archaeologists. And according to Jordan, I haven't read the book yet. According to Jordan, the book detailed how all the stories of the Bible were just that, stories. So what does that mean? That means there may be some truth to them.
Yeah.
How are we to tell until archaeology comes up with all the stuff? Of course, the discovery of the city of Troy was a big confirmation of some of the ancient text. How are we supposed to take that? Well, all the religious people think, well, you take it on faith. Okay, I see how that works for some people.
Yes.
But myself, I like to question things a bit more. And so, you know, this brings us right to like the abduction phenomena, how abductees testify that they've experienced this certain reality and it's real to them and they bring back information. But as soon as you bring this over to the psychological field, they can break it down biologically and display in a number of different ways how memory can be faked or fooled. Not even if someone's trying to do it, but just naturally. EM fields, electromagnetic fields, can mess with your brain memory. You can have hallucinations. You can be under various forms of hypnosis. Sleep paralysis. There's a bunch of different of reasons why you can have bad memories or false recalls. So, you know, we can be fooled really easily. So what is reality? You know, and when you realize the situation that we're in, you begin to see how absurd society really is. It's absurd how we have this Democrats versus Republicans, and that's it? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, seriously, that's all there are. That's you're either a Democrat or Republican or a Green, but, you know, yeah, you fit in a box.
And how, I mean, that hurts me. I'm limited by that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that way? We're supposedly electing genius or brilliant individuals into public office. Otherwise, they wouldn't be vaulted up there. At least that's how the theory goes. Yet they seem to toe this line that is really one of distraction and confusion. And personally, I'm tired of it. And that's, you know, again, we're back to my book. Quit listening to these people who we've already given power to. We know the saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So by definition, if we give power to somebody, it's going to corrupt them. So if we don't give our own power away, then wouldn't that stand to reason? If everybody didn't give their power away, there'd be no corruption, because there no one else would have power to be corrupted by. They just right. have their own power.
You know, that just makes people go, I don't know if I want to do that. I think I'd like to have more power than most people. I think I should be head of the thing. It's just human nature to want more. I mean, people just,
Is that human nature, or is that the product of generations of mind control, of being boxed into society that is limiting from the very beginning?
That's a really good question that you just posed.
And I tend to side with what I just said. I think history shows that human history is one of war and conflict. Yet we seem to have ancient texts that talk about peace and how we used to lie down with the lion and the lamb together, and we were all brothers, so to speak. And God, you know.
Well, you can't control people. If you can't divide them, you can't control anybody. That's an easy one, right?
Okay, but why would you want to?
Because power is your drug of choice, I guess.
Okay, and so there you see the start of it, is it starts with one person who has an imbalance over power. And from there, it blossoms. And so if everybody was concerned with their own power and not anybody else's, then how would anybody else be tempted to do what in modern times we call corruption or crime? To me, it seems really simple. You manage your own self, be responsible for yourself, and there's no need for a government.
Well, yeah, that's that's the very substance of the old adage, if it weren't for the government, we wouldn't need it. You know?
That's funny on multiple levels, John.
Yeah, I was hoping for that.
Shirley MacLaine's book, In the Camino, she talks about having visions of a society without police. And that's a society where people know who they are, and they know their context and the place in which they are manifested in the physical body, and they're responsible for their actions. And what I see, or what many people see as crime, as you hear about on the local news or the CNN or whatever, is really just offshoots of the original human who really had a waiver about who he was or who she was, who they were, and what their role was, so that those perturbations over thousands of years lead to a society like this where people think it's natural to be protected by someone else instead of protecting themselves. And this goes back to my worldview about how magic is really done, and that's through ritual, symbolism, and intention. If you hold the symbols of fear in your mind, you're going to need someone to protect you. But if you hold the symbols of who you are and the lightness of your being in your mind, if you hold thoughts of immortality in your mind, in my view, you deflect all this other stuff. And that's, if every individual lives that way, in my view, that's how society is really supposed to be. And in that way, every individual can express themselves as they wish.
Give me the shortest answer you can on this as we roll up toward our... I can't believe how fast the time is going by, do you know? Well, we've got another hour to go. But it's still going by a little bit fast. Do you think we're being compelled? Everybody was hoping for a really big awakening, 2012. I don't think it's because they were afraid of 2012. I think they were looking forward to it. And Nathan there at Command just told me we just got 1 minute. So when we come back, let's talk about whether or not you might think we're being compelled to evolve in our consciousness, or if that's just a little figment of our imagination. We'll get into some crop circles and some MJ-12 stuff too when we come back with Brett Luter, author of A UFO Hunter's Guide. And as I said before, that's just the beginning. This is Coast to Coast AM.